Forge Ministries is pleased to welcome Curtis Bowers with a message entitled, The Agenda for America.
Well, how has the weekend been? Hopefully you've had learned a lot and enjoyed the good fellowship. Like we have, it's been a wonderful weekend. Let me just wait one second here till they close these doors. Have you, everyone that's in here, have you seen the film Agenda? So I kind of know who's... Has anybody not seen the film? Oh, he has. Okay. There is different talks for different purposes and to accomplish different things. And one of the key points of me, our family making the film Agenda, and as I've spoken at different events and things around the country, is to wake people up to how serious the problem is with our country right now. And so sometimes it is not perceived as a cheerful, upbeat, happy talk, because it's not. There's a point. Optimism is a wonderful thing. I think that's why we loved Ronald Reagan when he was president, because he was very optimistic. He gave us this vision of a city on a hill and inspired us and helped us strive toward that, which is wonderful. But I think optimism, when it is used to ignore the reality of what's going on around you, as a vice. And that, I see a lot of that going on in America today. People that simply do not want to know how serious the situation is. And that's a huge problem. I think in all my research and all my study on trying to figure out what had happened to America, I think the greatest single secret, if you want to call it that, that I found was that our country is at war with the greatest enemy we have ever faced. But it's a war from within, and the enemy has convinced us that they do not exist. And so they've been able to do battle with no opposition against them. I mean, that's the greatest secret I found that shocked me, is America was collapsing, disintegrating from within due to the purposeful actions of those who were the enemies of our country. And that's how it came. I'm going to tell you briefly how it came about. That's what they asked me to speak on today. Back in 2007, I was appointed to be a state representative in Idaho. And I had been busy for many years running a restaurant. We had a restaurant and raising my family and doing different things, and had not been as plugged into politics as I should have been. We all need to be plugged into as many different things around us as we can be, that we can have our children and families join in with us and do. Just like Dr. Ford talked about in the last session. Anything that is taking you away from your family, I don't care if it's ministering, I don't care if it's saving our country, I don't care what it is, that is not what you should be doing. Because it's never noble and right to sacrifice your children for anything. There's no cause that's so noble, no, that's worth sacrificing your children. It's not. So, that being the case, politics is one of the things that you can be involved in as a family. If you have good candidates, you can go door to door with your family. And children giving flyers and things to people is very effective, just like it is when you go door to door sharing the gospel, inviting people to church. God uses children's innocence and purity to soften the heart of man, and we should take advantage of that. That's, I think, one of the blessings that a young person has over an adult, is that it's hard for even hardened, sinful man to attack or to not accept the kindness from an innocent and pure child. Well, as I was a representative, I've started to see in our own state legislature there in Idaho, which is one of the most conservative states in the nation, we have an 85% majority of Republicans in the House and the Senate, and we have the governor. So it's a super majority, and we could do anything that we wanted to do. And I was very excited to be appointed and to be in there. I thought, man, we are going to make Idaho the role model for the nation. We can make this, we can turn it back 150 years and just be where other, I think other states it'll start to snowball, and maybe this little state that most people don't even know where it is could have the impact to change the entire country. And so I was excited. But as I got in there, I found out very quickly and was very disappointed to find that the type of person that has been attracted to politics for the last 40 or 50 years is the type of person that should never be involved in politics, because their personality, their weakness is the title, the name tag, the position. And so once they get in there, they so love all those parts of it, they'll do anything to keep it. They don't want to lose that. It's so important to them. I had so many men that I got to know. We'd go to lunch every single day. We'd spend hours together. Many of them, I believe, were born-again Christian men that were raising good families. Some of them even homeschooling. But they were cowards, all of them. There was no one that wasn't. It was a weird, I was like, what is going on here? No one has the guts to stand up for anything. And they would say, well, it's an election year. Maybe we can do that next year. And they never seem to understand the most foundational thing about politics is if you're representing the people, all that matters is you standing there for them, and you don't worry about the details. You're like, no. And I tried to explain to them, don't you understand if we do these things that are right in our platform, the things we say we stand for, yeah, of course we'll be attacked by the media, but to any thinking person, you know, anytime you see the media attack anyone, I know I do, I know, oh, that must be a good person. I don't even know who they are, but I'll vote for them. I've done that many times. I didn't even know much about them. I voted for him because I saw the media attacking him. It let me know if they're attacking, he has to be good. He has to, because they don't attack their own, and they always attack their opposition. So it's become so corrupted, it's made things very clear. And so, you know, very, and anytime they're promoting someone, hey, I thought he was a good guy. He must not be, because they would not be promoting him. So there's something I don't know about him, or he presents himself in a different way. Well, so that was a wake-up call, and I was very discouraged, because I thought, if we can't stand for truth with courage in a state where you're in the vast majority of people would agree with you. So you're not doing anything radical or fringe. You are main line for Idaho, for the people of Idaho. And you still can't do anything. Our country has some serious problems. And I started to dig in and to find out, why is that? What has happened? Why is there no fiber left in the people? The character has just been sucked out of our country. What has caused this? Is it an accident? My main question in making the film was, I wanted to know, isn't an accident what has happened to America? I think that was my thinking before I started. I thought, you know, I guess this just happens after so long. Things just start falling apart. It's sad, but it's just, that's what goes on. And I think that's what they wanted us to believe. Because if you believe it's an accident, you're very unlikely to do anything about it, because you just, well, it's falling apart, nothing you can do about it, just the way things go. But as I dug in, I realized it's not an accident. It was purposeful. It was so purposeful, and I found so much information from people that hated our country in their own books that my head was spinning, because I thought, they have told us what they wanted to do. They've outlined it. It's been available where you can read it if you're looking, and yet we've allowed them to do it. I mean, it was incredible. I remember I wrote some letters that became very controversial and were on the front page of the paper and different things. And an older gentleman, what had happened real quickly for those of you who hadn't seen the film, in 1992, 16 years before I was a representative, an older gentleman asked me to go to this meeting that the Communist Party was having. And I didn't know much about any of that stuff at that time. He just had studied communism his whole life. And of course, in 1989, the Berlin Wall had come down. And then in 1991, in December, the Soviet Union dissolved. So everyone in the world was saying, communism is dead. Our side, their side, every side. Communism's over. Wonderful. Ronald Reagan won the Cold War. Wonderful. And so, but this is now 6 months later, the summer of 92, and the Communist Party USA is forming a new group called the Committees of Correspondence. Isn't that a wonderful sounding name? Do you know that's the name Samuel Adam had for his patriotic group that founded America? And they always steal things that sound so good. One of the most hardcore communist organization in America is called the Committee to Defend the Bill of Rights in Chicago. They're headquartered. Anyways, you study this, you just go, man, they use words to deceive us and trick us into thinking we're talking about the same thing when we never are. And so, but at that meeting, they had outlined an agenda. They said, we realize we cannot take America by force. They will always be able to outspend us on building up military weapons. It doesn't matter how much we build, they just build more. And they just had 8 years of Ronald Reagan, and they were realizing, okay, we got to go to Plan B. It's not going to work. We can just never outspend them. That capitalistic society creates so much wealth, they just can always spend more. So we're going to Plan B. And I thought this Plan B was new when I heard it, and I wasn't impressed by it. But they said, we're going to destroy three things. We need to destroy the free enterprise system in America. We need to destroy the families. And we need to destroy the moral fabric. And to hear them talk about these things, it was hard to comprehend. They were older people there, too, which was a shock to me. Most of them 50, 60, and 70 years old, in suits and with briefcases. There's about 1,400 of them. And I thought, I mean, when I walk in and saw that, I go, this is weird. But they were up there preaching their Marxist philosophies as passionately and as with as much commitment as any pastor I've ever seen. They were pounding on the pulpits, and they talked about, everything was flipped on its head as I was listening. To hear them talk about the family, it's the most evil institution ever created by man to enslave women and children. I mean, they just went on and on, like, what planet did they come from? It was weird to hear them talk about morality, how they would use terms like evil. They don't even believe in right and wrong, and they're using evil and wrong and wicked to talk about what is good and right and true. And it was just, it was really unbelievable. I had a hard time. I sat there for three full days, all day long, all these breakout sessions, all these things. And this is what they basically, in a summary, they said, to destroy the free enterprise system, and this is 1992, we are going to get behind the environmental movement and use that to regulate and tax and strangle business out of America. And again, in 92, the environmental movement was kind of a bunch of nuts and flakes. I mean, it was not mainstream at all at that point. So when they said that, I remember actually writing in my notes a big question mark. What in the world does that mean? I couldn't even comprehend how the environmental movement could do that because it was so far removed from that type of thing. Second thing, for the families, they say we need to continue to push the feminist movement. It's starting to free women from this slavery of marriage and the concentration camp of family. And that's the actual words they used. They called it a concentration camp, a family. And then they said to break down the moral fabric that is enslaving the people and not allowing them to be free, we need to get them to accept homosexuality. This is 1992. Today, it's the main issue. Those are the main issues in our country. Well, that's what happened. I left this meeting. I didn't think about it again. I'm married. I'm finished up graduate school. God's starting to bless us with children. And my life moved on. And it wasn't until I was a representative 16 years later that as I saw the legislation coming through the House and businessmen were calling me, you can't pass this thing. It'll wreck our business if you do this. All of a sudden, just the light, God just brought that back to my memory, that meeting. And the light went on. And then when I opened my eyes, I started to think about all the other things. And I realized, no matter how crazy it sounds, no matter how far-fetched it is that such a minute, minuscule minority could fundamentally turn our country on its head, I have to face the facts. It doesn't matter if it sounds crazy or not. For them to have an agenda that is so anti-everything we believe in, and for them to successfully implement it in this country in such a short period of time, they have to have influence. I don't know where it's coming from. I don't know how they've done this. I have not a clue, but I need to find out. And so that's what I did. I wrote a letter on that meeting I just told you about, and as a result, people were protesting at the Capitol, demanding I resign and everything else. But an older gentleman, he wrote a letter in defending me, and he said, what Representative Bowers says is true from that meeting in 92, but that is nothing new. That was all printed in a book in 1958. And so I called the gentleman. I said, sir, what? Thank you so much for defending me. What book is that? And he said, it's The Naked Communist by Cleon Skousen. And I got a copy of that book, and God used that book in my life to motivate me to step out and do something that most people would even call irresponsible. And when you have 9 children, and I was just finishing up being a representative, you don't have a job, to take your life savings and make a film when you've never made a film before is probably not a wise thing to do. You probably need to get some godly counsel to back you out of that foolishness. But I knew God wanted me to do it, so I moved forward. But let me read just a couple of these goals from 1958, and maybe they'll impact you the same way they did me, that made me realize we are in a war with a people that are using patriotic terms, or that say they care about the children, say they love our country, but are really just enemies from within that are continuing with hardly any opposition to dismantle, to finish off what is left until we collapse. Goal number 17, 1958, get control of the schools, use them as transmission belts for socialism, soften the curriculum, get control of teachers' associations. They've done all that decades ago. Okay, total decades ago. In 2010, the National Education Association, which is the most powerful organization in America in control of our government schools, they passed a resolution. Okay, it wasn't just presented. It passed through their committee that they wanted to take October 1st every year throughout all the government schools. And I'm telling you this story to show how radical the people in charge are. They wanted to take October 1st to celebrate Chairman Mao's successful communist revolution in China. Now, for those that aren't aware, some of the younger ones, Chairman Mao is estimated to have killed a minimum of 65 million of his own people. Hitler killed 6 million Jews. This man killed 10 times what Hitler did, and we are going to take a day throughout all our government schools to celebrate that wonderful, liberating, magnificent communist revolution in China. That's where they're coming from. That's who's teaching and training our children. We wonder why we are self-destructing before our eyes. That is who the enemy is. And they were smart enough to realize if we want to win this country, all we need to do is take the children. And then you have everything. Goal number 24, eliminate all laws governing obscenity by calling them censorship and a violation of free speech and free press. Think of 1958 America, those of you that were alive then. Think how, in comparison to today, how pure and clean the culture was. You know what I remember as a kid in the early 70s? I remember one time, kind of a rough-looking man on a sidewalk, he accidentally said the word hell while I was standing there as a boy. And the second he saw me out of the corner of his eye, he came over and apologized. He was a man covered with tattoos. I still remain him. He was a rough man. But even a lost man knew I shouldn't say anything that would defile the innocence and purity of a child, because he was raised in a Judeo-Christian country that feared God. Even, and guess where all the places to go drink and to do immoral things were? Back alley on the dark side of town. Because they were ashamed of their wickedness like they should be. They knew what was wrong, what they were doing. Today there is no shame in anything. It's the opposite. And it always goes to the opposite when you rebel long enough against God. Now, what is it called? It's called pride. They are taking pride in their sin. They are shaking their fist in the face of God, saying, how dare we dare you to strike us down? We dare you. And a country cannot do that very long without God having to strike them down. And when that happens, usually the righteous also have to absorb some of that conflict. Number 25, break down the cultural standards of morality by promoting pornography in books, magazines, motion pictures, radio, and TV. We live in a pornographic society. You understand that, don't you? Some of you young people don't understand. It is pornographic. The covers of the women's magazines in any grocery store in this country, those exact images in 1958 would have been considered triple X material and been against the law to promote in any way, shape, or form. And yet, not only are they on the cover of every magazine, you can't go to a mall, you can't go to many churches, you can't go hardly anywhere without being defiled because of how women dress. I mean, it's become so bad. I mean, my boy, we can't go anywhere. You cannot go anywhere. You just have to stay home. I mean, it's just in your wherever you go. Well, that's the fruit of that. Isn't it interesting to me? I think one of the greatest shocks I had, they understand how these issues are important. Most Americans don't get it. They understand if we can get obscenity everywhere, if we can get pornography everywhere, if we can, you know, get homosexuality accepted, they'll just rot and fall from within. Yet we don't get it. We don't stand. Most Americans don't get it. They think, oh, there's nothing. That's freedom of speech. You can do that. Oh, that's your choice, you know. But they knew. Our enemy knew. They knew exactly why we were a great country, because we didn't have these things. And we didn't have these things for the right reason. We feared God. That's the reason we didn't have them. Number 27 is the one that I think, even though these other ones are significant, is the greatest one that has had the most long-term penetrating effect throughout everything in America. Goal number 27 said, infiltrate the churches and replace revealed religion with social religion. Discredit the Bible. That's why what has happened has happened. All these other goals, if the churches, if the men of God stood from Genesis to Revelation and preached it and only worried about what God thought about their messages, that other stuff, they could push it all they want. It would have gone nowhere. 50 years ago in this country, if someone were to try to put some of those pornographic magazines in a local store, you know what would have happened? If they were stupid enough to even try that, you would have had every pastor from every Christian denomination standing shoulder to shoulder outside the convenience store saying, you will not put those in that store. Do you understand? Period. And guess who would have been standing right behind them? Their entire congregations. And that's why evil had to stay in the shadows and the closets and the back alleys like where it belongs. Because the men stood up with courage for God's principles, and evil, whenever men do that, evil has to just go crawl away and slither into the corner where it belongs. It cannot stand the heat of opposition of the truth. Well, those things, really just made me realize, okay, and God used some other things too, we need to make this into a film. And so we did, And I want to share this one story about as we did this. Well, I went to a film academy in San Antonio there with Vision Forum, which was a tremendous blessing. And as I went there, I started to meet a lot of young men that were into film, and I didn't know anything about it. So I was able to ask them so many different questions, and they were very kindly helped me, someone older getting into what they were 18, and they knew everything about. And so when I came home from that, I knew clearly, God wants me to make this film. And some of you heard this story, but those of you haven't, I need to tell you, because it is a great testimony of the God we serve and the power of prayer and the importance of all of us doing what? Obeying whatever God asks you to do. You have to obey. You don't worry about the details, even if it sounds crazy. Go make a film. I don't know how to make a film. Yes, sir, I will make a film. You have to help me, please. And he will be faithful to do that. If he asks you to make a film, he will help you make a film. And so when I came home, my children asked, you know, Daddy, are we going to make a film? And I said, yes, we are. God wants us to make this film. So that night, my son Christian, who was 5 years old at the time, he, just in our family prayers, he was praying before he went to bed. This same film festival, for those that may be informed on or not, they had, at that time, a $101,000 grand prize for the best of festival thing, which is a big deal. It's the largest cash prize in America of any film festival. And they'd heard about that because I'd been there and talked to them about, oh, this is a really neat festival and stuff. And so when he was going to bed, he prayed, Dear God, again, I haven't even started on the film yet. I've just decided I think this is what God wants us to do. Help Papa's film to win the festival. And I just remember hearing him pray that, and I, you know, almost made me tear up just thinking about that. Well, the kids all got that vision, and to make a long story short, they said, Daddy, let's fast on Friday and just pray that God will help our film win the festival. And now as a parent, you never want to discourage your child from praying about anything. But I have to be honest, I didn't have the faith. When I prayed, I always would say, pray, God, I believe, but help thou my unbelief. Because I thought, oh, my concern was we're going to pray so hard and then it's not going to happen. Then they're going to think, well, God doesn't listen to things, which he does. He always listens. And he always answers every prayer exactly how he wants to, because he knows what is best. So don't ever be disillusioned, young people. If you pray, God's listening, he cares, and he will answer every one of them according to his will, which when you get to heaven, you'll say, praise the Lord, he didn't do it according to my will. Because he knows what he's doing, and most of the time, we don't. Well, they prayed, and for 22 months, every Friday, my children and my wife and I, we fasted and prayed, and we went to the festival, and that night, they said Agenda won the best of festival and the $101,000 grand prize. That's the God we serve. And those things only happen when we are obeying. If you read the stories throughout the Bible, it's everywhere. He always has us do something. He doesn't need us to, but he has chosen to use us to accomplish his will. Because he's so loving to let us be a part of what he is doing. Just like the gospel, you have to hear the gospel to get saved. God does the saving. But he said, I want you to be the tools to share the gospel. And how are they going to hear if there's not a preacher? And how, I mean, see, he makes it very clear. That is our responsibility to take hands with him in his work and be involved in it. What a loving creator to give us a part in what he is doing, just to be faithful and obedient. Well, it's like that in everything. I mean, the loaves and fishes. God never once fed the 5,000 with nothing. He took something to feed the 5,000. Something that someone had to offer. And most of the time it was hardly anything. And most of us have hardly anything to offer. But it doesn't matter. Because to God, the 5 loaves and 2 fishes, they'll feed the 5,000. But we have to have faith enough to go, God, here it is. I've got a lunch for one. What? Do whatever you'd like with that. And he will. And that was one of our greatest lessons in all this. Obedience and then prayer. Always be praying about everything you are doing. He is there. He is listening. And he will give you direction and clarity and wisdom and discernment. And whatever it is that you're doing, you must do that. When we finished that, we started traveling all over the country. I was in 43 states over the next 18 months, being invited to speak at different conservative conferences, a wide variety from tea parties to churches to different people. Some of them saved, some of them just people that love this country and have respect for the God of the Bible but don't know him personally. And people had so many concerns. I mean, people were overwhelmed wherever I went. It was like we had 100 different enemies with 100 different agendas just assaulting them, and they're like, what do we do? And it was discouraging. And I remember one of our meetings that was so eye-opening, helped me understand how serious the situation is. We were in Mankato, Minnesota, and the Tea Party meeting, they met once a month in this nice amphitheater room on this community college campus. And we showed the film like normal. Then afterward, I got up to do some question and answer time and went through a bunch of those. And finally, a man in the back stood up. And I said, yes, sir. And for a couple minutes, he was very flattering. He just said, I cannot believe you have researched all these connections and people and groups that have so influenced our country and promoted socialism and communism. And he went on and on. And I'm like, thank you, sir. I appreciate that. And but then he stopped. And I could tell, I was like, my spirit sensed something's going on here. And when he stopped, he said, but I want to tell you something. He said, I'm a professor at this college. I am a communist. And we will win because we're taking all of your children. And he pointed just like that. And I mean, you could have heard a pin drop in that room. A couple of ladies started crying. A couple of men started screaming at him. I said, just calm down, let it, you know. And he went on. I said, let him talk for a minute. And he was, in his pride and arrogance, he wanted to let us know he was part of that. And they were winning, which they are. And he said, and he went through he knew the statistics. He said 75% of millennials are not going to church. He just went through thing after thing. He was so proud of himself. And it was tough. I didn't know what to say. Except when he was leaving, I said, sir, I just want to tell you something. On the day you die and stand before God, you'll find out you are on the wrong side. And he didn't respond to that, which I think God used that to, he shut his mouth. He was so arrogant, but he just looked at me and then he just walked out. And so, I realized then a lady in the front row, she said, how could he be at our little community college here in this little town? And that's when it hit me. I said, ma'am, he's at every college in America. And that's why you lost your children, and that's why you will lose your grandchildren. And I realized right then the most fundamental thing that you have to know to ever win a battle of any size, of any conflict at all, you have to know your enemy. And we don't. Sun Tzu was a great military strategist that lived 3,000 years ago. He wrote a book which is still the field manual for all military training in America and throughout the world called The Art of War. And in that he says, to win a battle, if you know yourself, you will win the battle 50% of the time. If you know your enemy, you will win the battle 50% of the time. But if you know yourself and you know your enemy, you will win every battle you go into. And I realized we didn't know either. And that's why we are losing every battle we are in, everything going on, and what's happening. Now, our country is heading in a direction. Again, I'm wanting to sober you, but as I said in my talk this morning, you are to fear nothing except God, ever. You do not fear man if you are a Christian. But we should be fearing God, a God that is allowing this to happen to our country because we have sinned against him. We have broken his commandments. We have ignored his statutes. We have not stood up for his principle with courage. We need to be repentant. This thing's about repentance, which is exactly the only solution for America. It is the only one. We are going to enter some dark days here, period. George Bernard Shaw, who was one of the leaders and the founders of the Fabian Socialist Society, which is still one of the most influential groups in the world, although they're all behind the scenes, so no one's hardly ever even heard of them. Tony Blair, used to be the Prime Minister of UK, he's a member of the Fabian Socialists, and many, many others. They work behind the scenes. Their whole goal, when they started in 1883, they said, we are going to turn the world into a socialist world, every country, but we're going to do it through evolution instead of revolution. That means we're going to slowly penetrate the institutions of influence and change it over time through evolution of just slow, a little bit of change until people wake up and the whole world is socialist. Instead of the way the communists were doing it, through a revolution. They love the communists, but they said we're going to work side by side with them, but doing it behind the scenes where people don't know what we're doing. Anyway, he was asked one time, what is socialism? And I love that in their pride and arrogance, many times they answer honestly. And they tell you what it is. This is where America is heading. Okay? If God does not have mercy on us, this is where we are headed. In a very short period of time. He said socialism means equality of income or nothing. Under socialism, you would not be allowed to be poor. You would be forcibly fed, clothed, lodged, taught, and employed, whether you like it or not. If it were discovered that you had not character enough to be worth all this trouble, you might possibly be executed in a kindly manner. That's it, though. It's humorous, except that's where we're going. You see how, but this is 50 years ago. He's saying, forcibly fed. They're going to decide what you eat. Clothed. Your clothing. You're not going to have a choice in what you wear. Lodged. You're going to be living in multifamily dwellings in the city, doing exactly what we tell you to do. Taught. They're going to be your teachers. There'll be no homeschooling. There'll be no private schools. And Karl Marx said that too. You can have no child outside of the government system or it will not work. And they will get to some point where they say we have to implement. It's not working because it never does, but they will blame it on that. We haven't had all the children in the system, and so we must go forward and do that because that's the only way we will finish and have this perfect one-world utopia that we have dreamed about. Whether you like it or not. I thought socialism was about, liberty and freedom and everything being fair for everybody and wonderful. Well, of course, it's not a utopian system. It's a system where the few will rule the many, being sold to the many as we're just trying to help you. And it's a total lie. Though many of you would say, well, I'm not going to go along with that. Great, they've got a plan for you too. You'll be executed in a kindly manner. I wish that was a joke, but I'm telling you this. Obama, as I have studied the left now for about 6 years, full time, the strategy they use is so... I'm working on a film right now, and it might be, I'm not positive the name, but it might be called Masters of Deceit, because it shows the strategy they use to manipulate us into doing exactly what they want us to do, all the while we think we had a choice in the matter. And we do not, the way they set things up. Obamacare, and I've learned this key thing too, there is no exceptions to this issue. You study all the way back to FDR in the 1930s. There is no exception in any governmental program pushed by the left since the 1930s, they are always, this is hard to comprehend. I've studied this enough where it finally sunk in. This might sound over the top when you have not studied it, but every single program, every single piece of legislation, every single policy, movement, whatever you want to call it, has been carefully crafted in such a way that it has been designed to make whatever the problem it says it is to solve, it has been designed to make it worse. It's like, what? Why would they do that? The reason they do that is because as the problem gets worse, it takes bigger government to solve the bigger problem, and so it can keep growing and growing. And therefore, in turn, every program, I don't care how it sounds so appealing to help the children or save the planet or whatever it might be, is always, the reality of what they're pushing is 180 degrees opposite of what they say. It's not 90 degrees, it's not just a lie. It is a lie. And I kept coming across this, and everything, I go, It's always the opposite. It's not just a lie, which could be anywhere in here. It is the exact opposite of the truth. And I go, that's crazy. But then I remembered, have any of you ever read the book 1984? It's by George Orwell, and it's a book he wrote in 1948 about what the world might look like in 1984 if totalitarianism is allowed to continue to flourish and grow. And in this world that he paints, and it's a great book, it's the I think it's the opening line of the book. It's a world where truth is lies and lies are truth. Everything has been flipped exactly on its head so that if you're able to flip those two things, then everything has been flipped. You don't have to worry about every little issue. It completely flips everything. Well, as we were talking about healthcare and those things in the future, Obamacare, as I've looked at and studied this now, I realize, you know what? What do they tell us it's about? It's about providing coverage and giving help to those that can't afford it. Okay? It's about providing more coverage. It's about helping more people. So you go, oh, that sounds great. But in reality, this is what it is, and you will see this unfold. Obamacare is not about providing coverage. It is about denying coverage. Do you understand that? That's why they want control of it, so they can deny coverage to anyone that will not play by their rules. The more things you control, it gives you a way to eliminate opposition without anyone knowing what's happening. They just simply didn't get the surgery. I'm sorry, you're on the waiting list. It just didn't happen. We're so sorry. Or you didn't get the medication. I'm sorry, we were so backed up, we couldn't do that. And that's all it is about. It's not about providing coverage. It's always 180. It's about denying coverage. Common Core, about educating our children and making them have a better education on the core subjects. But then, I mean, Common Core, they come up with these great names. A Common Core, I remember the first time I heard it, I go, finally, we're getting serious about reading, writing, and arithmetic. The core subjects, we're going to have a Common Core and get some education going on. It's the exact opposite. It's to now, what Common Core will do to the government schools is finally, give them a point to the dumbing down. They've been dumbing us down for 50 years, but it's kind of awkward when they come out, they're dumb, they don't even know what's going on, but now there's a point. We are going to make them foot soldiers to change the world, so Common Core curriculum is all about making everything cause-related so the children will become activists to fight on the side of our enemies to fundamentally transform this country and what's left of it, in saving the planet and everything else. And that's the way every issue goes, on and on. It doesn't matter what one we're talking about. But here's the thing. When we live in a society today that has been convinced there is a crisis, the world is on the edge of catastrophe, global warming and all this nonsense. Okay? But not only have they convinced people there's a crisis, which always makes people be willing to do things they would never think of doing if there wasn't a crisis, they use fear and crisis to accomplish 99% of everything they do. But not only have they convinced us there's a crisis, but during the last 40 years while we've been asleep, they have taught the children there is no difference between animals and human beings. Well, I have to speak the truth with you. When you've convinced people of those two things, you are going to have a slaughter like the world has never seen. Communism in the 20th century, with the forced abortions, it killed at least 500 million people. This century, unless God steps in and has mercy, I think by the end of this century, in 85 years, they will have executed at least 3 or 4 billion people through planned famines, disease, euthanasia, abortion, government controls, etc. Because it's like us going and shooting a squirrel or something. It doesn't mean anything to them. They have no respect for life. They have no respect for God. And when that happens, as R.C. Sproul was talking about today, when there is no restraint on man, he goes off the scales of what he is capable of, because he is evil. Stalin and all those people, they were just simply, they were at the top of the chain, so no one was there to say, stop it! And so they said, kill him. Anyone that disagrees with me. Stalin killed 45 million of his own people, and half of them were loyal communist members in his own cabinet. I just want to keep them fearful of me so they don't ever try to betray me. That's all it's about. And it's satanic. That's all it is. It's just Satan. What does he like? He likes to control. He loves when human beings die for any cause, because it's the image of God being destroyed, especially if they're abortion or murder or slaughter or serial killers. I mean, he loves death. I mean, that's his, like, you know, the same way we would love the Lord or singing hymns together. Which is, oh, so that's how he feels about death. That's who he is, death. The wages of sin is death. And that's what happens every time. Now, let me tell you one story here before I have a story that's a little more positive at the end here. But when I was making the movie, there was a gentleman, and if you haven't seen the movie, I encourage you to get a copy and watch it. It's only $10 here, but Trevor Loudon was a gentleman from New Zealand that I interviewed, and he has spent the last 30 years full-time researching that. That's all he does, 10 hours a day, all the socialist, Marxist, communist connections of people and groups in this country. That's all he does. And a couple things interesting about that, as I met him, I said, now, Trevor, you don't even live in America. Why in the world, why do you waste all your time doing that? And he looked at me and he told me something that shook me out and ended up being the final line of the movie, because I realized I was missing a big part of the piece of the puzzle. I was selfishly thinking about us. I was thinking America, my children, my grandchildren. And he sobered me up. He said, Curtis, if America goes down, we all go down. They're the only thing stopping evil from just instantaneously taking over the world. He goes, we live right off China and New Zealand. The day America fell, we will get a call from China saying, you are part of us now. And we will say, yes, sir. What would you like us to do? We don't have any way to fight them. A military of 20 million men or whatever it is. I mean, it's crazy. And so I realized, this isn't just selfishly us. God has used America to restrain evil throughout the world. It has been just a beacon of light, even in its fallen state it is now. It's still there, where evil men around the world know, what will America do? There's still that question mark. Will they rise up against us if we try to enslave these people, if we try to do this, if we try to do that? And it has stopped them. We're not just talking about us selfishly. We're talking about the people of the world, the light that they hope one day maybe their children will get to go to America and be free and use their talents and gifts God has given them to provide for their families and do something. That's what we're talking about. And I realized, oh, how selfish I have been to think just about myself and my children and my stuff. That's the fight we are in for truth and righteousness. It's so that all men can be free. All men will have a place to be able to worship God and do the things God would have them to do. Well, when I was with him in that interview, I said, Trevor, who do you think is the most influential man in America? I was just curious. He's been studying this. And he, without hesitation, he didn't, he said, Robert Borisage. I said, Robert Borisage? Who in the world? I've never even heard of it, the name. I've been researching this for a couple of years. He said he's a behind-the-scenes guy. And I think his group is called Center for American Progress. And he said he used to be the head of IPS, which I'd heard of that group and different things. The IPS is called the Institute for Policy Studies. It is right now today the largest think tank in the United States of America, in Washington, D.C. It provides more information to all of our elected officials more than any other group in Washington, D.C., and it was started in the 1960s by the KGB, and he was the head of it, and it is still there today. It's the most respected think tank in Washington, D.C., of anyone. And in the 1990s, when the Venona files and things came out of the Soviet Union, we were able to look at some of the, we saw, like some conservatives had predicted, this thing is red. We could tell it's red, and sure enough, the money to start the whole thing came from the KGB. And so he was the head of that and different things. Well, I just one night late, kind of unlike myself, I emailed him. Mr. Borisage, I'm just a beginning filmmaker. And I made a very little deal out of it because I didn't want to, you know, come there and with my little camera and go, what are you doing? And I said, just making a documentary on how much America has changed over the last 50 years and how far we still need to go. So kind of just from his perspective, I knew he would want to comment on that. That's what I'd like you to comment on. So he was assuming I'm coming from his perspective. So a couple things happened in this that were amazing. I got an email back within 45 minutes saying he'd be happy to. Here's the date and time. Now, let me just tell you, I interviewed a lot of great people on Agenda from our side. But almost all of them took me 6 weeks of emails back and forth and phone calls trying to get 30 minutes of their time. And to be quite honest, many of them were concerned about what is it going to do for them and is it going to help? How many people are going to watch it? And this guy, who Trevor Loudon says is the most influential man in America, in 30 minutes, yes, I'd be happy to do it. I don't care. And when I went to meet him there in person, a few things happened. I walk in, and he says, oh, here's my office. You can set. He goes, I'm so sorry, for we're short-staffed right now. This is April 2009. Obama had just been elected, come into office in January. He said, I'm sorry we're so short-staffed right now. Obama has taken almost my entire staff into his cabinet. I'm so sorry. And so anyway, I sit down on him, and I'm there, and he's doing stuff. He just left me in his office. Right there on his desk, a big picture of him and Castro together like buddies. During the Cold War, too, it wasn't like since then. He had his full uniform on, Castro's military, and Robert Borisage is there with him. A picture of him and Jesse Jackson together, buddies, and different things. And as I interviewed him, and I didn't put it in Agenda because I just felt God didn't want me to, but as I started to ask him questions, I realized the reason we are losing. They are so strategic and thoughtful and careful. And I mean, most of the things they're planning are planned for decades before we hear about them. But he said a couple things. I said, trying to be honest, I said, well, now we got, you know, Obama in there. Isn't, you know, everything's great now, right? I mean, is there anything left to do? And he looked at me so seriously. He said, are you kidding? He said, our work has just begun. And then he laid out their strategy, and it's exactly what they have done. He said, we're going to get to the left of him and yell, holler, and scream about how he's not doing anything he said he would do. He's a cop-out. He's some moderate. He promised to do and complain and complain and complain. I said, oh, okay, why are we going to do that? He said, because then those on the other side of him that are saying he's doing too much, he's a radical, he's an extremist, we will neutralize them, and he'll look like he's right dead smack in the middle. And I said, you've already thought of that? He's been in office 3 months? It's unbelievable. I realized, I remember my nephew was with me for the interview, and I said, you know, no wonder we're losing. We're up against an enemy that is engaged. They're winning a battle, and they know it, and they will not stop until it is complete and total collapse. The strategies he had, I said, well, what can we be doing? We're just unbelievable, just amazing, all the different things. And he had said at that time, and I've just seen this in the last 6 months, I said, well, what's the next battlefront? And this is, again, now 5 years ago, 2009. He said, it's the chambers of commerce in America. That's the last bastion of this free market nonsense. If we can take them over, there will be no one pushing free enterprise, and we'll finally be able to get rid of this evil system. And sure enough, I just saw just a few months ago, I was reading an article on something, that Chamber of Commerce National is really moving to the left. But he planned it. And you know what he said, how we're going to do it? He said, we're going to do it by getting young people to go to the Chamber of Commerce meetings, because everyone loves young people, and they don't want to bash their ideas and get them to push these ideas to get rid of this nonsense about free markets and these unjust systems that are so enslaving to the young people. And they've done it. I've got just a couple minutes here, and I want to finish with this story. I'm going to tell you this story because I don't want you to ever forget that God is in total control. Victory lies with Him and nothing else. No politician is going to save us. No person of any kind is going to save us. Only Jesus Christ. And He can, and He's merciful. One of the stories I came across as I've been studying communism and different things is the Communist Party of Romania. There was a man that was the leader of the Communist Party there named Ceausescu. And he is one of the most evil men in modern times. And he was a dictator there for decades. And this is the story of how communism died in Romania. And it's pretty amazing. There, he had been a ruthless dictator that just constantly, he hated religion, as all communist leaders do and stuff. He'd been bulldozing churches from the very beginning. There was no freedom of religion. There was agents in every single church. So he couldn't say anything. He couldn't do anything because they're right there and you know the penalty if you go against them. Everyone was in total fear, as they always are in a totalitarian system where man has been given the absolute authority over other men. You are fearful in that system because you should be. Anyway, there was one church there that seemed to have a good pastor. I've seen an interview by him. And seemed to have a good congregation. And the word came down from Ceausescu. This is in 1989, in December of 1989. I want you to bulldoze that church in whatever city it was. I can't remember right now. And it somehow made its way through the village. People heard that. And so about 15, 20 members of the church, they came and they just stood outside the church with their candles, willing to be bulldozed and killed. They said, "You're not going to take down our church." And the pastor was there with them. Well, the bulldozers came and the people were there and they didn't know what to do. You know, do they want us to just kill them or what? You know, so they have to get, so and back then there are not cell phones and all that stuff. So, they left to go find out orders. What do you want us to do? There's people stopping us from bulldozing the church. And he said, "Bulldoze it anyway, even if you have to kill him." So anyway, the next day the bulldozers come back, but the next day there's about 400 or 500 people standing out there. And so they stop again, they go, "Does he want us to kill 500? You know, so they went back away again and got orders. "What do you want us to do? There's 500 people out there now." He said, "I don't care what's there." Anyway, they came back later that night, and there's about 5,000 people out there standing. And it went on one more time where there was about 10 to 20,000 people standing out there, not allowing them to bulldoze the church. And Ceausescu said, "Kill them." And so they opened up with machine guns and started mowing the people down. They killed, I think, 500 or 600 people. And the whole time, this is going on, the people, it shows how perceptive they were of the battle we were in. They were chanting. You know what they were chanting? "There is God. There is God. There is God." They didn't care what those tanks were doing. They didn't care when they started machine gun. They didn't even leave. They said, "We're all willing to die because there is God." They saw that's the whole battle. It's either man or it is God. That is it. There's no other category. There is nothing else we are dealing with. We will serve man and be his slave, or we will serve God. And he will be our master and our savior. And they saw that. When I heard that's what they were chanting, I said, they got it. They understood. We don't care what you say about atheism. There is God. And finally, you know how God did this? They didn't have any weapons. They didn't have any power. They didn't have any influence. The ruthless communist soldiers that were mowing them down stopped and said, "What are we doing? We're killing our own people." And they got in those tanks and they drove to the palace and they took Ceausescu out of there. They dragged him out, and the next day was Christmas Day It was Christmas Eve that night. They took him out and they executed him. And they hung him from the city gates. And the next day, the headlines of the paper, Romania, said, the Antichrist is dead and Jesus Christ is born. God can do that if we're willing to stand with courage and to make the great sacrifices that we need to. But he's worth it. It's all about him. There is God, and we know that God. If you have to go to prison, if you have to do these things and lay down your life for whatever it is, it's for him. And it's wonderful. Do you understand that? I think we're going to have the opportunity to be the heroes for the next generation. And that's if we're faithful. All our heroes, the reason they're our heroes is because they did something great at a high price and most of them lost their life. That's why they're our heroes. Because they were willing to do that. We admire them for that sacrifice. Well, I think God might be so kind as he's going to let us be some of those people to do that, to be the example for the next generation. Where people will look back and say, I remember those people, you know, that were willing to die for what they believed in. Their God was so important to them. They said, we don't care if you kill us. We don't care what you do. There is God. And he will reign. And he is the king and the judge and the jury. And these evil men that are pushing this garbage, they will stand before the king one day. But he won't be the meek lamb. He will be the mighty lion from the tribe of Judah. And when he unleashes his wrath against them, they will get what we all deserve. But anyway, so I encourage you to stand for truth. Don't be discouraged. God is in total control. But he might have an assignment for us. It's one we might not choose, but it's a great honor to be one of the people that actually gives something back instead of just a taker. For generations, we've just had a lot of takers in this country with no one giving back. And it's a great honor to be one of the people that make the sacrifice at the benefit of others that you're not going to enjoy. That's what Christianity is all about. And we're supposed to be Christians and live like Christians. So, thank you for being here. Thank you for coming to this conference. And God has wonderful things for us to do. In your discouragement, if you get discouraged, you pray. Say, God, what would you have me to do? Because he has something for each one of us. Thank you so much.
If you would like more information about Forge Ministries, including information about our upcoming events, please visit us on the web at forgeministries.org.